We are rolling. Praise God and good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to today's teaching session, where we will continue our lesson that we began several months back entitled The Children's Bread. And this will be week number 15 in that teaching. Well, I don't know where the time goes. Wow, my goodness. So we left off last week, and we were discussing things that will interfere with sickness or masquerade as sickness, but that they are actually some type of spiritual phenomenon. So we have spent a good amount of time on that, so that it's important that you guys be able to know the difference, because you don't want to misapply your prayer energy. So if something is a spiritual matter, it needs to be approached from the spiritual plane. If it's a physical matter where it's a true sickness or disease, then you can approach it from both planes, actually, because you can always pray for a legitimate sickness and disease. But you just want to make sure that you're not praying for sickness for something that's not. Okay? So that's what we've been discussing for the last couple of weeks now. We talked about the deaf and dumb spirit. That's what the Bible called it. That's what Jesus called it. Nowadays, they call it epilepsy. Because that sounds a lot less noxious than deaf and dumb spirit. You can't call my kid dumb. Something along those lines. So, but it's the same phenomenon. That's the key. It's the same phenomenon. Whether it be epilepsy or deaf and dumb spirit, it's the same thing at work. And so you have to learn to distinguish between the two things. We talked about the seizures. That's a component of the deaf and dumb spirit. We saw that elucidated beautifully in Mark's gospel last week, where the father that had a son who had a demon, a deaf and dumb spirit, and it would take him and throw him in the fire. He would start shaking and quivering, and so he went through a classic description of a grand mal seizure. That if you would have looked that up in the medical books, it would look virtually word for word the way that it's described in the Bible. So that's pretty neat. So let's see what else we got here. Yeah. So then the father, he had entreated Jesus to help his son, and Jesus said, "All things are possible to those if you can believe." And the father said, "Yes, I believe, but help my unbelief." So what he's saying is, just in case my faith is not strong enough by itself, Lord, grant me relief from my disbelief. So this father was really covering all the bases for his son. And then you know what happened? Jesus rebuked the demon, and then the demon he manifested in the young boy by having him have the seizure and threw him down on the ground, and he became limp like he was dead. In fact, they thought he was dead. But then Jesus raised him up, and he was fine. And so that was a beautiful example of deaf and dumb spirit, or also known as epilepsy, which I defined as seizures of unknown etiology that occur paroxysmally, which means every now and then, and they are without explanation. There's no diagnosis to put along with it. Brother Kenny.
If we could go back to that scripture where the father says, help my unbelief.
Yes, which is in Mark's Gospel, chapter 9, verse 23.
Is that still appropriate for Christians to pray today?
Ooh, you can pray that, but it will kind of show, it'll show itself out to be a deficiency of faith as a Christian. Because, watch this, he says, Mark's Gospel, chapter 16, Jesus says, these signs will follow those who believe. So we're held to a higher standard than that father who said, I believe, but help my unbelief. So he was covering all of his bases, but you only have to cover your bases when you're not sure you touched the base on the way around. Ooh, that was deep. So I would say it's not that it's unlawful to say it, but it betrays a little bit of absent faith, because the person who's a believer and who understands these things, they know that they have power and authority to do these things. So there's no, so that's not the kind of prayer that they would pray. That's a hedge your bets prayer is what it is, really. You know, it's like, oh, Lord, yeah, Lord, I believe with all my heart, but help my unbelief. Well, you can't have it both ways. Either you believe or you don't believe. And if you do believe, then you walk out in that belief. If you don't believe, you figure out how to add to your belief. And how do we do that? Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. So that's the end. So when a Christian comes into that knowledge and we apply that, we now have on board the faith necessary to do the task. So that way we should not need to hedge our bets, you know, by putting that little disclaimer in there, which is really what it does. I mean, it sounds like it's a humble thing, but it's more of an ignorancy thing, because otherwise it makes no sense what Jesus said about these signs will follow those who believe. And one of the signs was in my name they will cast out demons. They will cast out demons. So if they've casted out a demon, then they don't need to worry about having to still deal with that demon. So it's important then that we understand what we're asking of God, and that we have true faith in believing that God will do it and standing our ground. Because there's no law that says the enemy's not going to come along and try to snatch it up, because he will do that. He did that with Jesus, okay? So he will come and try to confound your prayer if he can get away with it. But if he can't, now you are in a position to have your prayer answered from full faith, okay? Excellent. Well, I think there was a hand in the back there. No? Okay. All right, so that's deaf and dumb spirit, also known as epilepsy. Now, let's move along to this aspect, because we talked about healing, because we know that the Bible says that healing is the children's bread. But there's something more powerful than healing. Ooh, that's deep. Something that's more powerful than healing. What is it? Okay. Brother Tommy?
Perfect health?
Yes, and somebody over here said, I think it was you. Okay.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, so you both are correct.
I did not hear it.
Living in health is more powerful than being healed. Okay, why? Because if you've ever been sick, it almost never feels good. You know, I mean, can anybody think of a sickness or disease that feels good? I can't think of a single one. Most of them feel pretty awful. So it's not something that you're going to want to volunteer for. You know, the professor comes up and says, we need some volunteers for your people. We need to be that. We're going to make you sick. And they actually did that in a number of cases. Back in the day, they would do human experimentation, and they would actually deliberately infect people with stuff. Like there was a trial that they did in down south somewhere, where it was in the prisons. And they gave all of the prisoners, what did they give them? Was it TB or syphilis, I think? Something icky that they gave to the prisoners so that they could gauge the history of that disease, the progression of it. Nowadays, they wouldn't dream of doing something like that. That would be really, really against protocol to deliberately infect somebody, even a prisoner. But back in those days, they didn't have such qualms. But the point is that living in health is a whole lot better than the best of diseases. So how do we? So that's something that is within our grasp. Because if you're absent disease, then that means what you're left with is health. So that's pretty cool. Okay. So as I previously discussed, the key to walking healthy is to avoid falling victim to all the things we've been talking about, all of the ignorance, unbelief, rebellion, all of those things that we talked about in the last several weeks. If you can avoid all of those, so you subtract those out, and what you're left with is health. You're left with health, and you look around. Yeah, I feel fine today. Wow, praise be to God. Okay? So if you avoid the doorways to sickness and disease, then you can walk in health. Okay. Now, obviously, there are many ways that one can jeopardize their health. Okay, so that puts it at risk. You do that by abusing your body in the ways that we talked about, and things that defile that your temples. Things like smoking, doing drugs, drinking, getting fat, and a host of other things that will slowly but surely chip away at your health. So it's kind of like, the works kind of like this. Your forebears kind of prime your pump, and they will deliver to you, to your body, or they will deliver to the construction of your body the best genes that they have. Now, if they got lousy genes, then all you're going to get is lousy genes. But if they got some strong genes, then they will deliver those to you, because that's how the new creature is made. They could take some from the mother's donation and some from the father's donation, and put each one is half. You put them together, you have a whole, and then you have whatever genes that you got from either side, and those genes are either going to be good, or they're going to be mediocre, or they're going to be detrimental. So those are the three choices. So how does one go about optimizing the genes that you end up with that allow you to live in health? Okay? Well, you hope that your forebears, your parents and your grandparents, that they were nice people that didn't do a lot of drugs and drinking, at least while you were still in the womb or still in vitro. No, still, what was that? Yes, not even in your utero. It goes back, you were still like a gleam in your daddy's eye. That's what they used to call it. It goes back that far. Yeah, right, there you go. You were still in the loins. So that's where the damage is done, because once you're in utero, your genes are your genes, and you got it is what it is. So the time to intervene, the time to step up and have a good outcome is while your genes are still in limbo, okay? And so then you would have the best chance of having expression of those good genes if your parents and your grandparents gave you a good set. If they give you a lousy set, then you're gonna pay the price for that, yeah. And we call that the constitution. Yes.
So can
go ahead.
So if a father is using drugs, mm-hmm. and he impregnates the mother, can yep. his drug use transfer over?
Not in the form of drug use, but it'll transfer over in the form of bad genes that are not as robust as they should be. And so, and there's no doubt that certain types of drugs that people take will affect their ability to procreate healthy children. So it's not a good idea. If you plan on having kids, it's not a good idea to defile your temple with all of that, with drugs and alcohol and stuff like that.
So I know with the mother, if she's using drugs, mm-hmm. and becomes pregnant, that will definitely impact the baby.
Yes.
But so if the father's doing drugs, mm-hmm. his drug use will also impact.
Yes, because it affects his sperm.
Okay.
It affects his sperm. It affects the count, and it affects how
good is the integrity of.
Ah, that's a good word. On the integrity of the genome, and when it's been assaulted by those kind of things, then it's liable to have some errors in it, and you'd be surprised. The errors, we're not talking like big, giant errors. Remember I told you about sickle cell anemia? How it is a genetic, it is a disease, and it is mediated by a genetic condition whereby your body, while it's busy doing its thing with the genes, it has what they call an SNP, single nucleotide. What's the P? Single nucleotide. I forget the P. You know, that'll definitely come back to me in a minute. Anyway, it's not. It's where your gene now becomes, in this case, in the case of sickle cell, substituted. It becomes substituted, and there's a. So it's supposed to be, and this is on the hemoglobin molecule, because your hemoglobin is coded for in your DNA. And the hemoglobin molecule is a four-chain amino acid with about 145 amino acids per chain. And all of that has to be coded for by your DNA. So on the number six position of the thingy, in the sixth position of the hemoglobin molecule, it's supposed to be glutamic acid is what they're supposed to, what your body's supposed to put in that spot. But when your genes are all screwed up, it doesn't put glutamic acid in there. It puts valine, which is another amino acid. And it puts that on that spot, on the sixth spot, instead of the glutamic acid. So you would think, okay, it's 144 amino acids, you know, just one little teeny tiny error. Who's going to notice? Well, apparently your body notices, because then you end up with a disease called sickle cell anemia, where your cells are very, very prone to changing their shape, abandoning the biconcave disc shape that is normal for red blood cells into this little stipply, spickled, little pointy thing that won't go through the capillaries. So now your body's stuck because you need your blood going through the capillaries to carry oxygen to your tissues. And because of that one little mistake, that one little transposition, you have a disease which used to be 100% fatal, usually by the time you were 15 or 20 years old. Apparently, they've been doing a lot of making a lot of headway with it, and so now people are surviving well into their 60s. And that, trust me, that was unheard of in my day. There was no way that anybody lasted that long, because it kills the organs, because the blood can't get through to the organs, so they die. And that usually occurs in a very young age. Most of them didn't survive out of teenage years. That's how bad it was. And so that's an example of where somebody is not being robbed of the ability to live in health because they got a bad set of genes. Those of you that have been with us a long time, you remember that the Obazaways, remember them? And they had a daughter who had sickle cell disease. So you have two types. You have sickle cell disease and you have sickle cell trait. And the trait is when you have one parent with a bad gene, with a sickle gene, and the other parent's gene is normal. So that's a situation that the body can compensate for. But in the case where you have it's on both parents, then there's no protection, and then you end up getting the disease. So Nosa, who was their daughter, she had sickle disease, which meant that both her mother and her father both had sickle trait. Okay, because it's inherited as an autosomal recessive gene, so you need to have two copies of the bad gene. So if both parents have the bad gene, then you have 25% of your children are going to be afflicted that way. So, that's an example where your parents let you down because you didn't do anything, you didn't do all the drugs. Now, I'm not saying the sickle cell is a result of drug use, because it isn't. It's a single nucleotide. Still haven't got the P yet.
Polymorphism.
Thank you. Go on with your bad self. So why you let me drift in the wind all this time? Why did you help a brother out 10 minutes ago? You didn't want to interrupt me? It would have come back to me eventually. Yeah, single nucleotide polymorphism. Thank you, my sister. Okay, which is basically swapping genes, or putting, not even swapping so much, but putting the wrong gene in the wrong spot. Or putting the right gene in the wrong spot, or the wrong gene in the right spot. But neither of those are very good.
It's just amazing the order in which the Lord has designed everything so perfectly.
Yes. Billions of transactions going on at any one time, and all it takes is the simplest of mistakes.
And that's the result of the curse on the land.
Yes. Yes, because of the curse on the land, that now our bodies are under attack, and our bodies, if eventually they wear out, which was not designed by God. God did not design us to wear out. You know, but our bodies do eventually because they're under the curse, and they're made with a cursed material. Our bodies come from the ground. So therefore, because the ground is cursed, our bodies are cursed, and therefore we end up with a bad scene where it's kind of hard to live in health. So the measure you want to look at to determine whether you got a good deal with your genes or not is you look at those forebears, you look at those progenitors, your parents, your grandparents, your aunts and uncles, and you see what's the overall health quotient of the family. You know, like, do you have a situation where, say, all the men in the family die of a heart attack at 40, between 40 and 45, or all the women get breast cancer, or some members of the family get heart attacks, and there's all kinds of different disease processes that people can get involved with. And these things are indicative of the fact that they passed on these detrimental findings to their kids. And then the kids then will pass it on to their kids, but it also goes to shortening life. That's why you see clusters. Things tend to cluster together. So like families, they tend to get certain kinds of tumors and certain kinds of cancers. Sometimes they'll have a certain incidence of heart disease and heart attacks and a whole host of other different things. And so those are the things that we have inherited from our parents and grandparents. And it was unfortunate because they didn't have any better shaped genes to give to us. So therefore, people end up with less than robust health. Very difficult to live in health under those circumstances. So some of it can be mitigated, but most pretty much going to have to deal. It's pretty much like got your name written on it. Yeah, Brother Tommy?
Yeah, I just had like a distant relative, like a third or some cousin, mm-hmm. just pass away like a month ago or so.
Mm-hmm.
He was just, I think he was maybe a year younger than I was, a couple years younger,
mm-hmm.
and from heart complications or something with his heart.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a younger brother who passed away like maybe 10 years or more ago,
mm-hmm.
that same thing with yep. something with, and then their father passed away. The father was the first one to pass away, but his father was probably younger than 60 years old when he passed away also.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no more men left in that immediate family.
Yes.
They all
and that's how it works, exactly like that. And you end up getting genes that are not robust. And it's, again, the exquisite design of God, it's amazing. I mean, there are billions of those types of cellular transactions going on. And any one of them, with the slightest mistake, you're jacked. So it's any wonder that we all live to this age anyway. Ooh, that reminds me of something. Ooh. Remember, it was 2013, and there was an earthquake and a tsunami in Japan. And within that process that happened, some terrible damage was inflicted on their Fukushima reactor. One of their Fukushima reactors, there's four, they had four of them. And one of them was shut down for maintenance. The other three were operating. And when the earthquake and the tsunami happened, they for some strange reason, they put their emergency generators underground. And so when the tsunami came through, those generators were immediately inundated. And when you inundate a generator, it stops working, which it did. It stopped working, so that means that the pumps no longer operated. They had no means to send cooling water to the reactors, so all three of those reactors melted down. They completely melted down. Not just kind of like Chernobyl. They said what happened in Fukushima was way worse than Chernobyl. Why am I bringing this up? Because apparently, and I haven't researched this out beyond seeing looking at a couple of articles on YouTube, apparently, you either drink it or sit it down, one of the two, but don't make it creak and groan. Those three reactors, they completely melted down, and lately, that what I was reading in this YouTube article that I was watching, all of that debris and toxic stuff that all leached out of the damaged area, and it was like millions of tons of stuff, and all of it was radioactive, highly radioactive, and all of it is heading eastbound, and in the northern hemisphere, we are the first area you come to when you look at eastbound tidal movements. So now what's beginning to show up is the garbage that was all that stuff that the tsunami washed away, the, you know, cars, the washing machines, you name it, it became part of this big conglomeration of garbage, which is slowly working its way due east, heading for the Aleutians in the Alaska and the western coast of the United States. And so it's apparently, it's already beginning to take its effect, because in the ocean, in that area where the track is that's tracing the element, it's a dead zone. It is a dead zone. No animals, like no fish, no crustaceans. There's been mass die-offs of like the sea lions and things like that. This is the kind of stuff they ain't telling us. One guy was doing an experiment, and he took a Geiger counter, and he took it up in a plane. And he had the Geiger counter with him, and it's supposed to read about 30 what we call sieverts. And I'm not sure what a sievert is, because I'm used to the other designation that they use for quantifying them, which is REM or RAM. REM. So they're using this new term, sieverts. So whatever it is, it's supposed to read no more than about 30. As he flew over the Pacific Ocean, the number kept steadily rising on that Geiger counter until it got to almost 1,400. So it means that all of that stuff, that toxic stuff, is in the air as well as on land. And it's like a dead zone. And so that means that they're having to go far and farther afield to get fish, which kind of makes me a little suspicious that maybe they're selling this stuff to us, and you know, and not informing us of the great danger. I'm talking about our government. And it wouldn't surprise me if they did do it that way. But it was very sobering. They've been storing millions of pounds of sand at the site, because it's all contaminated, and it'll be contaminated for hundreds of years. But they got nowhere to put it. Where they gonna put it? You know, they can't just leave it there. They're finding out dumping it in the ocean isn't working, because it's literally killing off the ocean. And that brought me to mind of scriptures in Revelation, where it talks about a third of the stuff in the sea died. And judging by what they were saying, a third might be right about right. Yep. Brother Tom, your hand was up.
Has anybody tracked it or tried to determine the word means like the likeness of that happening, those nuclear reactors melting down, what happened, everything being washed out, and the rise in the amount of people that have cancer in the United States? I mean, because they're, it's dramatically risen.
Yes.
You know.
Absolutely. Of that, I'm convinced. Because radiation is radiation. It don't care.
Yeah.
It's an equal opportunity afflictor. And if the only way you can protect yourself is don't be around radiation.
Yeah.
Okay? Because what it does is, it goes back to what I just said about how all of our cell division that's going on, millions of different cells in our body, and they all have to do it perfectly. Well, being assaulted with radiation makes it very difficult to do that. So that's why if you get hit with enough radiation, two things happen. You get cancers, and you continue on, you can die. So so that's not good, and I think that the government is probably not really telling us the whole story. Because to have to go up that far, that high up in the radiation, there's no way that's good, that's a good thing. that's definitely got to be having a toll, taking a toll on humanity. It's certainly taking a toll on the aquatic world, you know. And we talk about big animals, not just like starfish and stuff like that. You know how they have it here in California? They have these little things where they go down after those fish down there, like the abalone and things of those kind of things. All of that stuff is contaminated. And the thing is, here's the scary part. You're scared yet? What we see right now is just the tail end. It's just the opening salvo, is what we're dealing with now with this. That it's going to get much worse because they unleashed tremendous amounts of radiation. And the unfortunate thing about radiation, depending on what isotope it is, it could stay toxic for thousands of years. Thousands of years. And so right now, what these things are contaminated with is cesium-137, strontium-90. These are all nuclear split products, meaning they do not occur naturally in nature. So they actually were using them as a means to track what was going on with the melting down, because there is no natural source of these elements. And so if you find yourself in the midst of cesium-137 and strontium-90, or iodine-131, then you've been seriously afflicted by radiation. And it's a bad scene. And I'm convinced they're not telling us, because there's nothing they can do. That's the problem. There's nothing they can do about it. Like Chernobyl, that was 30 years ago. That bad boy is still red hot. And it's leaking through the stuff that they made to encase it. And when that meltdown happened, they didn't have time to try to be pretty, because it was leaking too much radiation. All they wanted to do was get a layer of concrete over it as best they could to try to stem the tide of what was being released. So they called in the army, and they sent them up to the roof, because their job was that they wanted to get all the radiation stuff in one place, because it was all over the place. So they brought in the army. They could spend 45 seconds in the midst of that radiation. They would take a shovel full and throw it over the roof down to the ground below. And you do one shovel and you're done. Not only are you done, you just received a lifetime bit of radiation, a lifetime dose of radiation you just received in 45 seconds. That's how hot that roof was. Now, they're telling us that pales in comparison to Fukushima, which makes sense, because Fukushima was 3 melting down reactors. And Chernobyl was only 1. I get the feeling that we probably, and I don't say this lightly, but we probably need to stop using radiation. We probably need to stop messing with nuclear reactors. We don't have enough knowledge to keep it under control. And unfortunately, the cost of mistakes are catastrophic. They're catastrophic and long-lived. Like I said, we'll be dealing with those things for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, ostensibly. You know, I got a feeling that all that's going to be taken care of when the end times comes. But it really sobered me this morning when I was looking at that video, because they were talking about all the dead zones, and they're showing all the dead sea lions and starfish, just pretty much everything that lives under the water is being affected. It's being affected, and of course, here, and I was thinking, because gee, I finally developed a like for fish, and now all my fish are contaminated. Salmon. You know how salmon like to spawn and go back to their original place. Nope, they either didn't come back at all, or they came back with just a few members. And if that happens, they don't spawn. If they don't spawn, they don't make a new generation. You know, so it was tremendous damage that was done to our environment. That I guess their reasoning, that no sense telling everybody, because there's nothing they can do about it. And that's the tragic part. There literally is nothing that they can do about it. Then I'm sorry, brother. Did I forget you?
Yeah. Go ahead. But that's okay. You kind of roll more into it. We have, Ryan?
You're on.
We have how many nuclear plants in the United States?
About 105.
And I know we have one up north.
don't
I don't
have
know how many
it,
we
you?
Have in California, but only seen
California,
one.
We have one.
Yeah, that's the, I own.
The Santa Ynidro.
Yeah, I seen
San Ynidro. Santa Ynidro.
It's humongous.
That's the one, San Onofre. That we have the one.
So both of these are on.
Diablo, is that a nuclear reactor? What's that? I don't know. I'm pretty sure there was just one.
Did you hear me?
San Onofre. My Google Light's not here, so it's Sister Debbie, you be my substitute Google Light. And
Pastor, why did they build this one up here on the fault line?
Why they build it up on the fault? Oh,
they put it on the fault line.
Because that's why we can't be trusted with nuclear energy. Because of that stupid stuff like that.
They're not going to tell us when something happens.
No, that's why I'm telling you now. So I'm just going to ruin your day because not that you can do anything about it.
So how long does that take to take effect if something happens like a leak or?
It takes effect immediately if you're in the line of fire.
It filters down. It would take
right.
What,
it depends on the tides. It depends on what it is that's contaminated, what the half life of it is, and all of those things factor in to letting you know how much time do you have before danger strikes, and so it gets in the jet stream. It gets in the tidal pools or the tidal tracks for the water, and it was. 5 years ago, and it made it. It's now showing up on the west coast of the United States. The debris from Fukushima is now showing up on our shores. That's something else that they're not really telling you. Okay, so it took about 5 years for it to waft its way over here, under no motor control, just from the tides, and the current or the currents. It took about 5 years for that stuff to get here. And so we're a landmass, so once it gets here, it's going to stop. And the thing is, again, it's sitting there on the shore. The radiation levels are going through the roof. So not only is it killing all the wildlife, but it's got to be affecting us as humans.
Well, I noticed that our cars,
mm-hmm.
overnight, they have it doesn't have to. You can have a sunny day. Mm-hmm. Next morning, you have a heavy coat over your car. Yeah, where maybe 5 years ago we didn't have that.
That's the San Joaquin Valley.
Yeah, I know it has something to do with the forest fires, but
no, not even.
But it seems like it's beyond that now.
Well, it was always beyond that. The forest fires was only one aspect that caused a lot of particulates in the air. Okay, it's the San Joaquin Valley itself. We live in a bowl. And so we don't get a lot of wind currents to move the air out. So it tends to sit there, and it stirs up a lot of dust and debris, which end up in the atmosphere. And then when the next time the wind blows or rains, it falls out of the atmosphere down onto the earth, and will cause your car to become full of dust. And that's not new. That's been happening ever since I've been in California. I've been here 30 years. Because I used to take note of stuff like that, but now it almost doesn't even make sense to wash your car. Because by the time you get back home from the car wash, it's dusty again. Certainly by that next morning, for sure. So it's like, why waste your time washing it when it's only going to be dusted up again? And especially now with the forest fires going, oh my goodness! And I told you, I can feel it. So I'm being victimized by this environment, you know, because I ride my bike, and so when you're riding, you're breathing more. Okay, I'll get to you in a second, brother. So when you're riding, you're breathing more, and you're breathing more in of whatever's out there. So what will happen to me is if I ride my bike, that night I'll be lying down in bed, so I'm flying flat, which means that I'm not enlisting the aid of gravity. And I'll wake up with a coughing spell, which usually lasts about a minute or 2 minutes, and then it stops. And what it is that all of the junk that I was breathing in earlier that day settled in my lungs, and now my body is getting rid of it. And it does it just about every time I ride my bicycle. Now, I prefer not to have to deal with that, but the only alternative would be not to ride. Or like I've seen guys out there with masks on. So, Yeah, I don't know, that to me this looks a little creepy. So I don't know. I don't know if I could go that far. Yeah, yeah. But what saves me is that I have an incredibly strong constitution, and I did not abuse my body and my lungs by smoking dope and smoking cigarettes and stuff like that. So my body's in prime condition to fight off stuff. So I could put up with a minute or two of my body expelling all the particulates that I breathed in that earlier that day. See? But this is the fight you fight for health. Okay? There was a hand somewhere. What was that?
So there's only one, since 2012, there's been only one operating nuclear power plant.
Would you repeat that again? Where's Super Dago? Oh, there you are. Oh, I'm sorry. Would you repeat that again? There's some interference going on over here.
Since 2012, there's only been one operating.
How many?
One.
One.
Operating
not two.
In California.
Two or one?
Since 2012. So probably what they were thinking was before 2012. So since 2012, we only have one, and that's expected to be phased out. It's planned to be phased out by 2024.
Oh. And yeah, like California didn't have already enough problems with making enough electricity.
And it is Diablo Canyon.
What, that's the one that's left?
Yeah.
San Onofre's down?
The only one left that's operating right now is Diablo Canyon.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. San Onofre is the one off the I-5.
Yeah, it's like Brother, he said, it's by San Luis, by Avila.
No, it's not.
Diablo Canyon.
Oh, I'm thinking of San Onofre.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, all right, so there you have it.
So we split it.
We split it, yeah. I was half right and you were half wrong. So put us together, we made a right. Yes, Brother Brian.
Okay, so I'm wondering if radiation causes cancer,
yep.
Why does the medical community treat cancer with radiation?
For just that reason.
That sounds like a catch. I mean, how do you
treat it? You're exactly right, brother. Okay, what chemotherapy does is it tries to kill the patient. The art of chemotherapy is to give the patient the right kind of drug and the right amount of it so that you kill more cancer cells than you kill normal cells. So it's a contest that's on. When you give patients, all of these things are toxic. Chemotherapy, radiation, these are all very, very toxic. So when you give somebody radiation, it's going to do what radiation does. Radiation destroys cells. Okay, by messing up their DNA, so that one in a trillion mutation that would happen becomes one in 10. Okay, so it kills off cells. That's how they're using it as a treating agent, because they give it to you, and the premise is the cancer cells multiply more rapidly than normal cells. So whatever you do to damage the cells, it's going to have a bigger effect on the cancer cells because they're dividing more than the non-cancer cells, which are dividing less. And that's the whole mind thing behind chemotherapy. So yeah, it's an acceptable loss, because if you do it right and the cancer responds appropriately, you can kill off the cancer before you get to lethal effects on the body. Okay? And then in which case, then the cancer should be gone, and then you can stop taking it. But even then, there are people that you can get cancers later on down the road from your chemotherapy back in the day. So it's not a pretty stuff, you know. But it's all we got.
That's all we got. Yeah.
It's all we got. So.
But if your body has radiation in it,
mm-hmm.
How does radiation, adding radiation to that, exclude the radiation that's already there? That's the part I'm missing. How does radiation get rid of radiation? Or is it just radiation because the cancer become with the radiation in it?
Yeah. In other words, okay. When you treat cancer with radioactive stuff, uh-huh. you're giving them something that's designed to break DNA. Okay. That's what radioisotopes do if they're of sufficient strength. They will break DNA. Now our bodies, believe it or not, have the ability to repair DNA, but that's impaired when you got a bunch of radioactive stuff on board. Okay. So you'll get afflicted with radiation, and it will destroy that cell. And so you got 10 cells here. So you got 5 normal ones and 5 cancer ones. You give the patient the radiation dose. Okay. So the radiation then the first thing it wants to do, it wants to break the DNA. In order to break the DNA, you got to unravel the DNA. So there's a certain time that the DNA is unraveled. That's when the cell is dividing. Then the DNA is unraveled. That's when the radiation strikes and breaks that DNA. And if it's a huge break, it breaks it in such a way that the body can't fix it. So that's a cell that is that either is transformed now into something that's hideous and something growing strange and weird, or killed altogether. So that we know this is going to happen. So the trick is to kill the patient less than we're killing the tumor. And that's the art of radiation therapy. It's not pretty. It's inelegant. But that's all we got. That's all we got. Besides chemotherapy, which does exactly the same thing, but using a chemical means instead of radiation.
Yeah, it just seems odd that you treat someone with something that's already killing them.
Yes.
I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around that.
Exactly.
That just makes no sense to me.
Well, look at Sister Paula, okay? She had a tumor, brain tumor. She had a breast tumor is what she had. It was a primary, a breast tumor. I said Paula, didn't I? Oh, thank you. Glad she wasn't here to hear that. Because she would have been like, Pastor! okay, so what was it? Sister Michelle. Yeah, so she had the breast tumor. So the breast tumor was growing. Okay, they gave her an experimental treatment, which was this substance that was designed to attack only certain kinds of cells. It's genetically coded to a certain marker that's present on certain breast cancer cells. It's called HER2, H-E-R-2. And when you give the patient that, if the tumor is sensitive to it, which is what they would do, which is what would necessitate them giving it to you, if the tumor was sensitive to it, they would give it to you, and it would go after the cells that have that marker on them, the HER2 marker. It'll leave all the other ones alone. So now if you got a substance that will attack specifically the cancer cells and leave the normal cells alone, that's ideal. So they're now, with the genetic research, they're now starting to come into its forefront in that arena, where they're figuring out now how to target the therapies so that they destroy the bad stuff and leave everything else alone. Because the trick back in the day was you want to kill the patient 10% less than you kill the cancer. And then you can have a situation where maybe, if you're really lucky, you kill all the cancer cells. More often than not, you just knock them down, and then 5 years later, they grow back. You see? Yeah. But that's part of the irony, brother, of medicine, or the art of medicine, is, it's like we're using a gun to cure somebody with lead poisoning. Yeah. Brother Tommy.
Yeah, so if I understand... having cancer doesn't necessarily mean that you're infected with radiation or you have radiation, but it could mean that that's the cause of having been infected with radiation, correct?
If you have cancer,
does that mean that you have radioactive material and
not necessarily.
Yeah,
cancers are the result of genetic. Sorry.
I think that's where you're
not
having.
All
that's,
can,
think,
not
is
all.
Is that where you? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh,
not all cancers are the result of radiation.
Oh.
Okay. So there are many different ones. Something called aflatoxin B, which is a fungus that grows in Africa, that if you eat it, it likes to hang around on peanuts. Like things and that kind of plant matter, and if you eat it, then it'll give you cancer. So that's a fungus from a plant.
Yeah.
So there are many different things that will give you a tumor or a cancer. Only one of which is radiation.
Yeah, but you can get cancer from being exposed to radiation. You can get cancer.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what. Okay, I'm understanding.
Oh yeah, I mean, in fact, that's probably the main cause of. Cancers would be radiation effects. Well, maybe not the main, but a significant number of cases. Yeah. So in other words, you don't want. That's why they told those guys 45 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, 45 seconds. They had to get on that roof, grab a shovel, take a shovel full of debris, throw it over the roof, and run back off of there. And he was done for life. And they had to do that. They did it thousands of times with thousands of soldiers. Yeah, that's how high the radiation level was. Yeah, so that was not fun for them. And I forgot how there was a big uptick in cancers, because which makes sense. I mean, you're flooding the environment with a highly dangerous radiation. That's what's going to happen. You know, and again, not all radiations are equally dangerous. Some of them are not as dangerous as others. Some of them are pretty dangerous, like plutonium. I wouldn't want to mess with that. Plutonium is the whole isotope. Then you have what are called isotopic split products. So that one would be where you have nuclear fission. You split that atom, and some of the byproducts would be like strontium-90 would be an example of a byproduct, split product. Strontium-90 is extremely radioactive, and it also is not. It doesn't really occur in nature. It occurs mostly as a split product of nuclear fission, and iodine-131. That's not a good one because that likes to locate to it has a marker or an attractant on the body, which is the thyroid. So the iodine, because your thyroid uses iodine. If the iodine is contaminated, your body's going to incorporate that because it can't tell the difference, and then you end up with thyroid cancer. Yeah. So, yeah.
How would we know that our food is not being?
By a Geiger counter.
Huh?
I'm seriously thinking of doing just that.
No, I'm serious.
I am too.
Our food.
Buy a Geiger counter. Go to Vaughn's. Go up and down the vegetable aisle and the fruit aisle, and watch your clicks. And see if it remains on what they call a background level, which according to what I read or what I saw on YouTube was about 30 Rankins. Okay, a Rankin is a unit of measure of the force of the radiation. So what's background noise or normal is about 30. I told you when the guy was flying in the plane over the Pacific Ocean, his machine was registering like 1400. Okay, so now what that means is. You wouldn't want to fly like a pilot, like fly every day. You wouldn't want to do that. That could be dangerous. And we already knew that because when those planes fly at about 35, 36, 37,000 feet, you're already lost about almost half or less than half of, or sorry, you have what's remaining is less than half of your atmosphere. So you don't have anything there to block out the rays that come from outer space. And so if you're a frequent flyer, or like a pilot, or a flight attendant, or you fly a lot on business, you're going to actually absorb a lot more radiation than somebody who stays down on the Earth. Yeah, so you might want to give that some thought. Just the bearer of all kinds of good news today.
As far as the, I've always wondered about our meats and our stuff in the grocery store, because they can add something, and over a period of time, just 1% for the next, and you put it in there for the next 10 years can affect.
Well, you know what I'm noticing? I'm noticing that there's a lot of difficulty with cognition going on. Even me. But see, I started so lofty that y'all can't tell yet. Actually, you probably can. You have trouble with normal brain functioning, like pattern recognition, finding the right words, memory, that kind of thing, and those are definitely can be effects of radiation. But I'm noticing that it's happening more and more and more. At first, I was attributing it to just people that are older, but I'm seeing it even in younger people, where kind of like your brain is kind of like, it's almost like it's like a half a step behind. It's a half a step behind, And that caused me to wonder, even before all we thought about all of this, that caused me to wonder about are we being affected by all of the stuff that's going on the Earth, you know? And we can't trust the government to tell us because they're not going to tell us the truth until the zombies are walking down the street and they can't hide it anymore, you know? Because why? It'll be lawsuits up the yin yang, and it'll collapse the economy. It'll collapse civilization. So they're not going to tell us. But science is the science. Unfortunately, if you had honest people, I mean, instead of that crowd that's dealing with global warming, but if we had honest information, they would tell us what's going on. The reason why they don't is they don't really have anything to offer other than iodine pills. That's about the only protective mechanism that we have, that where in terms of prevention, would be iodine pills. But that only works against thyroid cancer, not the other ones. Yes, brother.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the pesticides. You know, yep. The crops are sprayed with pesticides. Mm-hmm. Now, is that a chemical that is easily washed off the produce, or is that something that has the potential to actually sink into or penetrate the skin of the produce? Or is that something you just wash it off and you're
good?
Well,
I certainly recommend washing it off, and it's theoretically possible that it can cause those kind of problems. It can be interfering.
I'm sure when they pick the crops, they take them someplace and wash them, right? I mean, they
usually.
Wow, that's it, huh?
Yep.
Wow.
Well, that's why it's always good to rinse your fruit. Not to mention the people have been handling it, you know, in the grocery store. You know, you got some peaches there. People have been looking at them and feeling them and squeezing them right after they came out of the bathroom and didn't wash their hands. Yeah. So, like, if you ever end up with hepatitis A, somebody doo-dooed on you. Yep, you end up with it. If you go to the doctor, the doctor, I'm looking a little yellow. You know, and the doctor does the test and says, yeah, you have hepatitis A. Somebody done doo-dooed on you. Because that's how you get it, fecal oral transmission. And it comes from people not washing their behind and washing their thingy-majiggies. What's it? The hand, yeah, hands. Yeah, slipping fast, y'all. Brother Tommy.
Do they spray the fruit?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, they'll spray the trees.
Yeah, I know they spray the trees, but I didn't realize that they spray them when they have the fruit on them. I don't know.
That. Well, here's where we need Brother
they
Scott.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah, because it seems to me that that's how they would do it, because there are certain bugs that eat the fruit.
Yeah.
So you want to kill them, so that's why they'll spray it when the fruit's on the tree. Yeah, yeah, Angelique? That was a good catch in that polymorphism.
I was actually watching a video just the other day, and I didn't get to finish watching the entire thing, so I don't know the validity of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they were saying that, like, in the school lunches, it's like a lot of the stuff that they're feeding the kids has a huge effect on the kids' behavior and cognitive skills these days. Mm-hmm. So I just, like I said, I don't know the validity of it. So.
Right.
But I did. I mean, there are videos out there, you know, of different things like that.
Yeah, and well, one has to take these things with a grain of salt, because there's a lot of hysteria and things like that. People going crazy and, you know, giving way to wild theories and all. So you don't want to go off to the other end of the scale and see boogeymen under every rock. So you want to keep a balanced approach. That's why I teach you guys these things, to give you the balanced approach. And you know me, y'all, for 30 years, I've not been all that involved with environmental damage and things like that, because mostly the people that involve us with that are just icky people that I don't want to be around anyway. But lately, I'm sensing that there's something amiss. That's best I can say. There's something amiss in our environment. Something that's just not adding up right. And it's, you know, I discounted the fact that, okay, maybe it's just me and I'm getting older. There is some of that, but it's not. That doesn't account for all of the, for all of the magnitude that we're discussing.
Not only that, I was reading another article a couple months ago. A lot of kids, and I was guilty myself, sleep with their phones right next to their head.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not sure of the validity of it, but
right.
They're just the radiation off of the phone is causing cancer.
That's what they're saying. That's microwave radiation. And the problem is that the studies that they do are usually biased. Yeah. And we need some unbiased research to be done. Because, I don't have a problem taking off my cell phone if it turns out that, you know, it gives you problems. And they're also blaming that for infertility in the men, because that thing is right pretty close to our genetic engines. And so to have the microwave, which is electromagnetic radiation, it's just at a different wavelength, but it's nothing you want to play with. Come on, you stick a hot dog in your microwave, you see what happens to it in about 30 seconds. So just imagine that something like that is assaulting your body every second. Yeah. So I think we've kind of made ourselves victims and vulnerable by our technology. And we're not really thinking things through carefully enough before we just throw them on society. Thank you. Yeah.
Before they started adding like chemicals and stuff to our food and mm-hmm. pesticides and stuff, was the food that we were eating actually worse for us? Or why? What was the reason for them to start adding all these chemicals to our food?
The reason, there's only one reason to put chemicals and stuff like that. That's to increase yield. Yeah. To increase the yield. Because if you don't put the stuff on there, there's all kinds of bugs that's going to eat your stuff. They're going to eat the leaves before they can produce the energy needed to make the fruit. So they'll eat the fruit, or they'll eat the bark, or some other way they'll destroy the plant. So the farmers, they will spray it with insecticide because there's all kinds of bugs and things that get on the tree, and they can destroy the tree. They can destroy the vine. They destroy the leaves. So to keep them all that from happening, they put chemicals on it. And then they hope that the chemicals will be gone by the time it comes time to pluck the fruit. And at the very least, they will then take it and wash it, if you're lucky. Thank you, brother.
So they're actually doing us a service by spraying it with pesticides and stuff like that.
They're not so much doing us a service. What they're doing us a service in this sense is that if the prices stay low, then we don't have to pay that much. But again, they're doing all of that to do for one reason, just to increase yield. Is what they're doing it for.
We were talking about the bananas. Mm-hmm. Bananas you could see little tiny seeds in them, in bananas.
Really?
Well, not anymore. They're gone.
Because now they probably don't make bananas on the vine anymore. They probably grow them in some kind of laboratory.
There used to be little black dots in bananas.
I still see those every now and then.
Every now and then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be all the time. Like
little black.
Yeah, it used to be every banana. Now you might go through a banana and see nothing.
Well, so everything has changed though when it comes to horticulture like that.
Well sure, because
we are totally out in the next level stuff.
Right. That's why you have your organics and we have your
right. Your
man produced stuff when we can do whatever we want to do with it because yep. it's, or you can go buy the organic where it hasn't been supposedly touched.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. So it's there's all kinds of funky stuff going on out there that's got me kind of suspicious. But like I said, I don't worry about it because nothing you can do about it anyway, so no sense panicking and getting yourself all worked up. You do what's in your hand to do, that's reasonable, and then you just count on the Lord for the rest and hope that you got a good strong foundation. See me, I'm relying upon my forebears because they were like practically bulletproof. So that pretty much makes me virtually indestructible. And so far for 62 years, my life history has proven that out. Because I've never been sick ever. And like the last time I had the flu, I was 9 years old. It was the last time I had the flu. So I just got those nice genes. And even my dad, who did everything he could to destroy his body with all kinds of no-nos, he still managed to eke out to 81 years old. And he should have been. He should still be alive right now, sitting in one of these seats talking about, you don't know everything. Oh, hey, what I want you to do for me, Kenny, while I'm remembering it, find me a section somewhere in one of the teachings where Dad was featured, because I want to have that for my brother. Yeah, so I'm sure you can find something where he's particularly saucy. He had a heck of a sense of humor. I didn't realize that. I was so busy being annoyed at him from irking me and getting on my nerves that I didn't really look at the subtle nuances of Teddy Crenshaw. Yeah, you don't miss those things till they're gone. Was I answering someone's question? No. Okay. So I said all of that to say that it's harder and harder now to live in health. No, take it back. It's just as hard. It's just that it's different stuff killing us. Because back in the day, let's go back to, say, 1900. in the late 1800s, early 1900s, what was the life expectancy of a person in the United States in, say, in the year 1900? Yeah, right about 35 years. Okay, so in other words, you could expect to live to be about 35 years old back at the turn of the last century. And after that, you were expected to die, because most people did. Okay, and they did all of that because back in those days, they usually succumbed to infections, for which we didn't have any antibiotics for at that point, because we didn't even know what an antibiotic was during that time. So if some kind of major infection, it usually killed you. Not to mention all the other stuff that people had got that we didn't have any treatments for, diabetes, heart disease, all of those things were in place, but we didn't have any treatments for them, or we had bush treatments for them. And so you add all that up together, I think it was probably just as dangerous 100 years ago as it is now. So they didn't really gain anything by being born out of time, and if we go by life expectancy, now life expectancy is about 78 years for, about 78 or 80 years for white men, about 73 or 74 for black men, about 76, 77 for women, for white women, and about 73, 74 for black women. So that's how the stats ring out. And so the life expectancy has pretty much doubled since the turn of the century. So there must be something going on that's accounting for it. And it's basically the technology that science is now able to extend our lives, sometimes not necessarily the quality of our life, but the quantity. And that's not the best option. You know, you prefer to have a longevity, but with quality. Kind of defeats the purpose of growing old if you're in a nursing home.
Right. Pastor.
Yes.
I have a question for you. So out west, our medical community, we treat with, I hate to use chemicals, but a lot of stuff is that way, pills and medicines. And I understand that in Asia,
mm-hmm.
they like to treat with more natural medicine, stuff like from the earth.
Yeah.
Things like that. Is that a better treatment, or is that less harm to the body? Treating with more natural things than what we use, like a pill. That's a chemical, basically,
mm-hmm.
right? Where in Asia, they don't treat with that. They treat with more natural stuff.
Yeah.
Is that better? Is that a better treatment? Is that less hard on the body?
I wouldn't say it would be better. It's different. And it's probably not nearly as effective. So they might find some chemical that or some plant extract. That, matter of fact, a lot of original medicines were from plants, like penicillin. Penicillin was formed from a fungus that literally grew on a piece of bread that you would have laying out for two or three days, and it would grow this fungus on there. And they happened to notice that fungus would kill bacteria. And so it became known as penicillin. And there were plenty of people who were really glad to see it, because prior to the penicillin, the main treatment for, say, syphilis was they used something called bismuth and some other chemical, and it wasn't good. So a lot of people died from the treatment. Yeah, so it was not necessarily that it's better, it's just different. And so they would... that somebody hold up a cell phone? Yeah.
It seems like there's a lot of like natural remedies and herbs for like small little ailments or upset stomach or something like that.
Yeah, and that's all. Well, it depends. Yeah. It depends. There are some things that have a chemical basis to their structure, so that would be considered a chemical. And then therefore that chemical may have an effect on the body. Then you have like what I call bush medicine, where old wives' tales, you know, things like that. People that pass on remedies from family to family, those kind of things. And that's not really an indicator as to the efficacy. So it certainly has an effect on somebody. It might make them have a fever or cause pain or something like that. But whether it's what they call efficacious or not, that it remains to be seen. And the only way you can prove that is you need to undergo what's called a placebo-controlled double-blind study. And what that means is you have somebody says, I found a cure. And you say, okay, let's test it out and see. So they take your cure, and they take 100 people that have the disease that you say you have a cure for. And then so you take those people, and you divide them in half. You give half the treatment, and the other half you give what's called a placebo, which is basically something that doesn't do anything at all. You don't tell the patient which one they have, and the person who's in the doctor who's administering it doesn't know either. That's why it's called double blind. Okay, it's called double blind because neither the recipient nor the giver knows which one has it. That keeps everybody honest. So then they let time pass, and they see the two groups. Does one group show that it stays alive better and longer than another group? Maybe they're on to something. Or is there no difference? Okay, so that's how they will test out drugs to see whether they work or not. And if it works, it'll be a dramatic effect, usually right away. And then they'll say, this stuff is really powerful. Then sometimes it's so powerful, the connection, that they will break the blind. Meaning they'll declare, this drug is like the cat's meow. We don't need to wait around for more trials. We can certify that this drug is efficacious. Okay, and then they will actually start using it clinically. But that's what happened with Sister Michelle, where they just started using that HER2 marker, and they were able to use it on her because her tumor had that marker, and she was able to utilize that, and it worked beautifully. It got rid of all the cancer cells in her body. But it couldn't cross the blood-brain barrier. And so the ones that had gotten to her brain were free to continue to multiply, which they did. And if you know anything about the brain, it doesn't like to share. It's greedy. It doesn't get along and play well with others. So there were, and I saw with my own eyes, probably 100 metastases in her brain. About 100. They were the size of a pea sprinkled through her brain. And those represented all of the tumor cells that had the HER2 sign, but they couldn't get at it because of the blood-brain barrier, and that's what ended up killing her. So it really wasn't the breast cancer that killed her; it was the metastases to her brain that did. Yep. yeah. So now what that means is The other women in the family, depending on what the prevalence of breast cancer would be in that family, that other women in the family would probably do well to have a mammogram, just to make sure that nothing is growing in a way that indicates that it's a trend, and that could be genetically related, and it really make good progress with the breast cancers because. They're really starting to home in the treatments because now they have another tumor marker that allows them to again single out the bad stuff, Brother Tommy, that target the bad stuff and leave the good stuff alone. So there's another different marker that takes care of that. So they are making some progress. Probably 10 more years. They may even boast of a cure for breast cancer, quite possibly. But in the meantime, the patients who are afflicted now, well, they're suffering, and that's one of the things that definitely runs in families, breast cancers, and that's for women. For men, it seems to be heart disease. There are trends or cohorts in families where, say, the difference would be about. All the men would have a heart attack, say, around age 40 or 42 or something like that. They would just kind of drop dead from a heart attack. And that would be highly indicative of the fact that there's something going on genetically with that family. So those are the things that you need to look into, because they're, if your family has a history of something like that, it would definitely be a good idea to get tested to see if you make sure you're not manifesting any of those signs or symptoms. And then you can turn what's designed to be bad, you can turn it into a positive thing. So that's pretty cool. So we're talking about living in health. We didn't get very far in it, but we had to lay the groundwork. So, and that was very good. So if you were asking a lot of my feeble memory these days. Any questions? Yes.
So going back to that, the chemicals and everything with mm-hmm. the fission, mm-hmm. when you said the fission, mm-hmm. don't they do that for those bombs? So like if they were to mm-hmm. do that fission, don't they like ever fail or anything? And then that like goes bad?
Well, it's not, the answer is yes, they fail. Sometimes they don't ignite, or they don't give the yield that they were expecting. And that works both ways. There was a nuclear test done in Nevada back in the 50s, and they miscalculated the yield, meaning how much power did the bomb release. They miscalculated, and it blew away the entire mountain that they had it dug down into. It yeah. destroyed the entire mountain, leveled it. Oh, yeah, so these things are the largest nuclear explosion ever was a 50-megaton detonation by Russia down in the South Pacific, 50 megatons. To put that into perspective, the bomb that destroyed Hiroshima had a yield of 16 kilotons versus 50 megatons. Needless to say, you would not want that bomb dropped on your country. So now what was your question, brother?
So you were saying that they do that for like the treatments or something,
right?
Did they ever fail with that or anything? Like, has that ever gone south whenever they're trying that for the treatments with the fission?
With the fission, yeah. Oh, you mean that they got out of control?
Yeah.
No, because you have to have a specific set of circumstances or provide a specific set of ingredients and configuration, and then it can from there what will happen is unless you put it in that situation where it can reach what's called critical mass, then the worst thing you'll do is you'll have a conventional explosion that throws a bunch of stuff in the air, including the radioactive material. That's called a dirty bomb, by the way, that's not near as dangerous as a full fission bomb, but it'll mess up your city for a long time if somebody were to light one off. So it's not something that should be taken lightly. And the fission product is sometimes it doesn't work as planned. But most of the time, it pretty much does. They pretty much got a handle on that technology. That's not good. Right now, what we're trying to do is keep everybody else from getting it. You know, because as you can see, the overwhelming and devastating consequences of being afflicted with this stuff. You really don't want any. You don't want some madman out there with his finger on a button. And so you want to make sure that you keep a tight rein on all your nuclear fissile material, which they do, because it's just so dangerous. It really is. It's incredibly dangerous stuff. You know, yeah. So we shall see. We shall see. But this is where we find ourselves. And it varies also by location. Some places are more dangerous than others. Like, for example, which would you think would be more dangerous to live? Santa Barbara, California, or Wyoming? What's that? Which one is more dangerous to live in? Wyoming or Santa Barbara, California?
Yeah,
okay, you say Wyoming, and Little Brian, what did you say?
I said Santa Barbara. I say if you don't like the snow, then Wyoming.
But oh, okay. Santa Barbara. Oh, okay. Well, the whether something's dangerous or not, it isn't dependent on whether I like it. It bears on whether it has an effect that's helpful to me or not. Brian, was your hand up? No, Renita was hand, her hand.
I think Santa Barbara.
Okay, why is that?
I think because of the jet stream. It hits the coastal before it goes inland, and Wyoming's displaced in distance.
Okay, that's interesting logic, but that's not the correct answer. Okay. What's different about Wyoming versus California?
The topography. I think the topography.
All of those are good answers, but not entirely hitting a nail on the head. What do they store out in the plains of Wyoming? ICBMs. Intercontinental ballistic missiles. Most of our ICBMs are out there in that area, in that wilderness area of America. And here's why it's a problem. We know they're there. Russia knows they're there. Who do you think they're gonna fire first at? Yeah. Wyoming. Because if they could take out our ICBMs before we could launch them, then they get to beat us in a nuclear fight. Yep. So these are some risks that we've made for ourselves, in the interest of, I guess, self-defense. And probably somebody can make an argument for that. I mean, they certainly argued that point for going on 75 years now. When they first detonated a nuclear bomb, Edward Teller, who was the chief of the scientists who developed that technology, when that bomb went off, he says, I have become death. Because he knew what the consequences of his research was going to lead to. And to see it in actual operation, that's when the real potential of the devastating effects they really hit home to him. And he says, I have become death. Yeah. So the thing about Wyoming is that it's a cool environment and everything like that, nothing to speak of. But unfortunately, they got several hundred ICBMs buried out there that are gonna attract targets. And the targeting is going to be a nuclear bomb, because you know you're not going to drop an Exocet missile on the silo. Those things they're deep underground, they're cocooned in concrete, so they're not going to be easy to get to. So the only way you can get to them is with another nuclear bomb. So they're going to light off. You don't want a couple hundred ICBMs lighting off on your backyard. That'll probably ruin your day. So that's what makes Wyoming more dangerous to live in than in some other, like New York City. Interesting. Just do that in for free. Mm-hmm. Question somewhere? Yeah, Radita.
Can I go back to the genes? Mm-hmm. I was thinking, if you participate in a clinical trial, mm-hmm. and whatever medication you're trying, mm-hmm. that's, I don't know, just anything.
Call it medication X.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Can that impact your genes that you expressed when you're procreating? Is there a potential for that? So let's say you're testing a cancer treatment drug, mm-hmm. and it's medication X. Whatever that medication is designed to do, can mm-hmm. that actually impact your sperm or your egg? So when you're procreating, it'll impact the child?
If it's deemed to show that there are some genetic consequences of having having a particular marker on your cells, and maybe that marker is indicative of something bad, like the BRCA, the BRCA2, BRCA2 gene. That's the one that Cheryl has. And when you have that gene, it's pretty much a guarantee, if you have that particular gene, that you're going to have breast cancer and or ovarian cancer. So it can, yes, in this case, it could be indicative of something very, very bad, sinister happening.
And then conversely, can a clinical trial positively impact your sperm or your egg? So if you're participating in a clinical trial, let's say for that BOCA 2 gene, and it's successful, can that then alleviate the potential for your child having that?
No, because it's what you're doing is when the tumor markers are showing themselves, and then on the basis of research, it has been shown that a patient who has disease A caused by factor B, that those things can be manipulated or they can be affected by whatever we do from the medical community. So what we're trying to do is, hopefully we can find something to target the problem, because if we can shoot a smaller target, we do less damage to healthy cells around it. Okay, so that's really the purpose of the marker genes, is to narrow down our firepower, so that we can close it in, so that we're not killing unnecessarily healthy cells.
So let me give you an example, make sure I'm understanding.
Sure.
Let's say, for example, sickle cell trait.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say there's a clinical trial that they're doing for sickle cell trait.
Mm-hmm.
And you have sickle cell trait.
Right.
And you participate in the clinical trial and it shows, oh my goodness, we've cured sickle cell trait. I'm just giving an example.
Right.
If you then, and it worked in you, the clinical trial.
Mm-hmm.
If you then procreate and have a child, your child will not then have the sickle cell trait because it was cured in you.
No, it would have it. Because in order to cure it like that way, you have to remove it all every copy of it from the body.
Okay.
And you just can't do that.
Okay, now I understand.
Yeah, so it points to the problem. Because in other words, because if the marker is present, then you know we can use this treatment for that marker and it should give us a positive result. Okay, but it's not able to reverse a genetic defect that way. That is the result of an SMP, because those are affected. Those affect every cell in your body, because it's part of your genome. Okay, good. Okay. Questions? Yeah, brother Eric.
When they give these shots for flu shots.
Oh.
Flu shots are supposed to be basically they're giving you the flu to fight the flu. Or how does...
They're giving you just short of the flu, giving you a very mild dose of the flu in order to fight it.
And I kind of understand what Brother Brian was saying earlier about treating it with the same, like, radiation.
Right. Uh-huh.
I understand it.
Yeah.
So why can't they do that same thing in a lot of things as far as treating, like they're doing with the medication for the flu shots?
Okay, because with the flu shot, what you're trying to do there is to stimulate the immune system. And the immune system gets stimulated when it faces something that it has to get rid of. So if the first thing it does is it goes to its record book and says, have we seen this before? What did we do last time it was here? Okay. So we see here that we had it 5 years ago, and it was treated with this particular treatment, and it worked, and it went away. So then you would come along. And that's how they would handle it, by giving you the medication. So now with the flu, though, in order to boost the immune system and give it a kickstart, you have to be exposed to the actual influenza virus. They do a process called attenuation, where they weaken the virus, so that it causes only a mild case of flu. Okay. Me personally, and this is my own personal opinion, this is how I live my life. I don't trust them to give me something decent. So I don't. I've never taken a flu shot, and never will take a flu shot. I ain't taking no flu shot, because it seems like a good number of people who take the flu shot gets very sick from the flu and end up dying. Where's your two buddies? Where'd they go? Oh, there's one. Oh, okay. Oh, okay, good. Yeah, so the flu shot is designed to stimulate the immune system. And then your body will make antibodies, so then when you face the actual flu virus, your immune system is primed up and ready to go and ready to pounce. And yes. Yeah.
And that's the purpose of all vaccines, correct? So I was thinking,
yes.
Like the chickenpox vaccine.
Chickenpox.
And now they were saying that, I know there's a movement amongst parents to not have your children vaccinated.
Yes.
And they were saying because they've, mm-hmm. quote unquote, I use the term loosely, proven, or there's evidence that they've created diseases later or symptoms mm-hmm. like Epstein-Barr, things mm-hmm. of that nature. So are those just an attempt to vilify the benefit of the vaccine, and is there any truth to that, or is it just the kid was just prone to have, you know?
No, it's true that, you know, and so when it comes to varicella, which is the virus that causes chickenpox, it's a real phenomenon, and it and so we developed, back in my day, you didn't get no chickenpox shot. They didn't have one. So you just had to fight it off on your own, which everybody did. Because we all, matter of fact, parents would have chickenpox parties. That if one of the kids had chickenpox, they would throw them all in a dog pile and let them infect each other. Why? The reason why they did that is because it's a lot easier to deal with chickenpox as a symptom complex when you have it as a youngster. It's awful when you have it as an adult. It gets much, much, much more trouble. So a lot of times, they will then not make a big deal out of chickenpox. I had chickenpox. And, you know, I had some few little vesicles here and there, and that was the extent of it.
So the vaccines are not necessarily causing kids to develop these social issues.
Like Epstein-Barr virus?
Correct.
It shouldn't cause that, but what it can cause is it can cause a full-fledged attack of chickenpox. It can certainly do that. But whether it's going to cause...
Or, I mean, I know autism is not a disease, so
right.
therefore a vaccine cannot cause a non-disease.
Exactly. So, but they try to intimate that that's the case because they want to blame the disease process on something. So if somebody's coming along saying that's not a disease, then what is it then? Oh, it must be chickenpox. See, but no, it's not. To answer your first part of the question as to whether it's advantageous to get it or not, what happens is this. If you've had the chickenpox already, you've already been vaccinated, or you've been inoculated, better word. You've been inoculated with the varicella virus, so in which case then you will get chickenpox and it'll run its course. What they're finding is the older somebody gets, the more weak that their immune system can get. And if your immune system is weakened, then you can get you're more likely to get chickenpox. Or as an adult, you're more likely to get shingles, which apparently hurts like a mofo, I hear. which is basically a recrudescence of your chickenpox. Because your body never actually gets rid of the chickenpox. Once you have chickenpox, it stays in your body for life. It usually hangs around in the spinal cord, in that area right there. And when the conditions are favorable, it takes a look outside, says, ooh, looks good, the conditions look good. It'll travel along that nerve root that comes, that wherever it's been hiding in the spine, it'll travel along the nerve in a narrow band that fits the distribution of the sensation of that nerve, and it causes a localized chickenpox right there at that spot, and that's called shingles. And it's really, really painful.
And what makes the environment, you said, you know.
Usually if you're immunocompromised in some way. Maybe your doctor has you on steroids for something. Or you're taking an antibiotic for something, or something that lowers your immune system. Okay, it'll cause that to happen. Or it'll make you vulnerable, where it'll say, ooh, the coast is clear. Wait, let's go on out and let's make war with the human. Yeah, and then you get shingles. Yeah, which ain't too cool, so I hear. Yes, brother.
Yeah, I think I got that one time.
You might have.
It was like on my side or
yep.
something.
Mm-hmm. And was it like vesicles, like red?
Yeah, and it was like, I mean, just touching it
yep.
made it. It was like, and so.
Was it a rash?
It wasn't that. It didn't get to that. It wasn't that bad. It was okay. just barely. Mm-hmm. I guess it was just at the beginning stages.
Yes. Yeah.
And then, but I went to the doctor, and he gave me something, and it went away.
That's probably what happened. Otherwise, those that area would have developed into a full-fledged rash.
Yeah, I know, because...
But they sent you, and they probably gave you something called a cyclovir, which is an anti... thingamajiggy. Dang, man. Y'all are taxing me today. No. Antiviral. Dang. Whew. Holy cow. Yeah, so it was... once you get that in, on your own or with the help of the vaccine, then you're not going to get it down the road. Or if you, but what they discovered was our natural immunity from having chickenpox wanes over time. So that's why they now recommend that adults get chickenpox vaccinations. They used to just recommend it for kids, but now they recommend it for everybody because in adults, it'll help with these shingles. And keep you from getting. We're talking about the chickenpox vaccine. Yeah, because I think that's now called for in part of the panel for little kids. Where's any little? It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Just even my shirt touching it was like.
Yep.
It,
mm-hmm. it, and what happened was by taking you to, while you going to the doctor and getting that medicine, it shortens the period.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you would have got the full fledged thing, and it would have been a bunch of vesicles.
Right,
yes.
I had known because. Oh, I'm sorry. I knew another, actually there it was a couple, was it both of them, Leonard and Debbie got it, or just Leonard? Oh, yes, somebody else had gotten it, mm-hmm. but they got the full-fledged attack, and it was not fun for them.
And neither one of them had probably had chicken pox.
Yeah, it was only one of them. It was just the husband. The wife, I thought it was both of them, but
she already had immunity.
Yeah,
but the way it went through my family, let's see. Charisse got it first. She came home from school with it. She gave it to her brother Michael, who gave it to his mom. And she was 30 years old with chickenpox for the first time. It was rough. And it skipped me because I had already had it at 5 years old. So it didn't affect me. So what I would recommend, the best way to handle it, is re-expose yourself in a clinical setting every 10 or 15 years. So if you find out you have a friend that has a kid with a chicken pox, go hang out with them. Yeah, because what it'll do is it'll expose your body to the virus, so it'll boost the immune response without causing all the other side effects. So it's almost like you're giving yourself your own booster shot. So that would be plenty sufficient.
In healthcare, we have to have our titers reevaluated.
Right.
And then if not Hep C titer, Hep B titers, or boosters.
Yes.
They do MMR, varicella, because what they were seeing was that the adults were getting chickenpox or shingles in the pediatric areas.
I wonder who caused that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, it's definitely very prevalent amongst the youngsters. Yeah. So, but that's one way to handle it. You can get a booster shot, or like I said, just go hang out with a kid with chickenpox. And chances are you won't get any, but your body will be exposed, and it'll ramp it up, and it'll kick it in gear and make fresh antibodies. Yeah. Questions?
Since we're on the subject, is there and has there been an increase, well, because of our population is greater now, but it seemed like when I went to school growing up, I see a lot more changes today with autism and different diseases. Well, that's not a disease, but why are these changes in?
Well, if you accept the premise that I made that the affliction is caused by a deaf and dumb spirit, then we can only attribute the increase in incidence to the fact that there's increased meddling in the spirit realm by these demons. So they're manifesting themselves more, and in which case then. It is registering on society as an increase in this disease known as autism. But it's not. It's an increased activity amongst the deaf and dumb spirit.
Okay, and I understand what we can't question when we get into the realm of the spirit. But because I was trying to tie it in with the foods and the different things that they've been feeding us over these years, over all the years, why increases up things
there
are
several
taking place.
Targeted venues that try to make that argument. that it's something in the environment and things like that. None of that has been reliably shown in any kind of good study. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, your kid comes down with autism and he had an orange last week, so they try to make a connection between them. Eating oranges makes you get autism. No, it doesn't work that way. So it's something you have to. If there's a candidate for being a causative agent, you have to put it through the same rigorous placebo-controlled double-blind study as everything else. So if you happen to notice that everybody who eats this particular fruit gets autism, that then you can now say maybe there's a connection there. But absent that, it's just pure speculation. Pure speculation. And most likely wrong. Yeah. Because especially what we, and when I say we who are who travel in both the natural realm and the spiritual realm, so then we're in a position to understand why we don't call this a disease. But in the natural realm, they do, because they don't entertain any information from the spirit realm. That's the problem. They won't even entertain information from it. So therefore, the knowledge base is severely lacking. Because if they would approach it from a spiritual plane, they could probably do a much better job of hunting it down and curing it. But medical science will not look that way, because it's not science. And for those of you on the tape, my hands were going in the quotation marks. Yep. So, questions? No? Okay. So, I didn't get to make it all my points that I wanted to make about living in health, but we can certainly complete that next week. So if there are no further questions, we can stop here. Anybody? Okay. So we will stop right there, and then we'll pick it up right where we left off next week. Thank you guys so much for your patience.